What day is it? I've not climbed into the pulpit and suddenly lost my place in life. Of course it's Sunday the 15th of March. And the classical scholars amongst you will know that today is the Ides of March, the notorious date of the assassination of Julius Caesar in AD 44. The stewardship team are hoping that I will mention that we're into the second week of our stewardship month, Talented, where we're looking at the gifts and talents that each of us has and how we already use them or don't use them, and asking members to give thought as to how they might use some of their skills to serve God here in the Abbey or out in the wider community. It's a campaign that's not all hard work, and instead we've got the opportunity of enjoying some of the talents within this congregation at a talent show and supper. So I'm hoping you'll buy your tickets afterwards. I've done the advert twice. Can I get a medal now? The quick thinking amongst you will have sneaked a look at the front of the order of service, and you'll have also worked out it's the fourth Sunday in Lent. And those who were wakened with a lukewarm cup of tea and burnt toast, or if you're lucky you're being taken out for lunch later today, well, you know it's Mother's Day or Mothering Sunday. And you know, I'm hoping that there might be one liturgically aware person out there, because you'll know that the fourth Sunday in Lent is also known as Laetare Sunday. Those final two names tied together for the roots of Mothering Sunday are deeper than our common understanding that it was a day that the servants went home to see their mothers. Instead, they refer to the 16th century practice of people returning to the larger churches, the abbeys and cathedrals, which were considered the mother churches of smaller Christian communities. These were great festival days where the nurturing of faith by family, friends, the people who shared the pew, was celebrated. And the nurturing presence of God was marked in word, song, and symbol. Laetare means rejoice, and in the fourth Sunday in Lent, it marks the halfway point in the dark period in the wilderness of our faith. With Easter almost in sight, for some, it was a moment in which Lenten observance could be briefly relaxed. Do you know, if you've given up chocolate, give yourself a square today. If you've not had a glass of wine, rejoice one day. Within an Anglican tradition, there might be a changing of colour for today. For while we will keep to purple, because we're Presbyterian and it was a struggle to get to purple, in some churches, there might be rose pink. Some even refer to the day as Refreshment Sunday, as breath was drawn before the final few weeks of Lent. Well, if this is Refreshment Sunday, if there's an amount of rejoicing, I wonder what you're making of this morning's readings. If we're thinking about nurture and encouragement, where might we find it in what we heard? And if you're wondering about talent, perhaps you're thinking about the opportunities for snake charming. So where to start with a strange reading about being bitten by snakes and the assurance of God's love? Do you know, it's most likely that these two readings are only paired together because the gospel refers to Moses' bronze snake on a pole, and I'm going to return to that thought in a while. But let's begin by wrestling with the story we hear of Moses and the Hebrew people. For me, it's a story of real Lenten angst. God can't seem to get it right, and the Hebrew people want to moan about it. The Hebrew people have been brought out of slavery in Egypt. In the wilderness, they've been fed with quails and manna. That sounds like luxury to some. But fed up with their nomadic lives, they complain. It's a marvellous complaint, one worthy of any childhood tantrum. There's nothing to eat and drink, and we don't like the food you're giving us. The Hebrews are then punished by being bitten by fiery seraphs. The Hebrew word means fiery seraphs, and it's the seraphs you'll find in the book of Isaiah. But for us, it's been translated as poisonous snakes. And to provide a cure, Moses is given a brazen snake, which the Hebrews are to look at. It's a strange story for all sorts of reasons. It doesn't tell the story of the God we think we know, having heard in the commandments that they're not to make any graven images. Here we find that the Hebrews are offered an image at which they're to look. How do we untangle what is there to find meaning and understanding for ourselves? Snakes in the Old Testament lead us back to the story of Genesis and the role of temptation. In the Jewish tradition, unlike Christian tradition, the snake, the tempter, in the Garden of Eden is not outside of God's command. He's there to test. Ancient rabbis equated the serpent of Genesis with the notion of Yetzer Hara, a human drive that equates to ambition, greed, and desire, although at times it's been badly translated as the evil urge. With that in mind, it's interesting to find that there's a Jewish Talmud myth where sages were keen to eradicate the Yetzer Hara. So they set out to capture and eradicate the monster, and having captured it, were waiting for a moment when it could be removed from all of time. But reports came back to them that no one was going to work, no one wanted to get married and have children, and even the chickens had stopped laying eggs. The story says that the sages realised that they'd misunderstood the drive, the Yetzer Hara, and that in fact it was not an evil urge. Instead, ambition and desire were a gift when used in the nurture and care of human society. What stories like the Garden of Eden and the venomous snakes warned of were when the desires got out of proportion and threatened the balance of community living. So on the journey with Moses and the Hebrews, there's a sense in which the complaints of the Hebrews are needed. They are what reminded the Hebrews of their relationship and dependence on God. But complaints can also be paralyzing and stop people taking action for themselves. The image of the snake acted as a reminder that while they were in relationship to God, they also had responsibilities in that relationship. They had a part to play. It's the image of the snake being lifted up that the writer of the Gospel of John is particularly interested in. The Greek word hypso means both lift up and exalt. And in this passage, we gather a sense of pointing to the lifting up of Christ, but also the exaltation of God in the life of Christ. In untangling the gospel reading, there's an element of needing to know who and where Jesus is talking to. But it may also be helpful to have a little understanding of when the gospel is being written. Our reading this morning is second half of a longer reading in which Nicodemus, a Pharisee and a member of the Jewish council, comes to see Jesus. He comes at night and in the darkness comes seeking a light to understand the darkness around who Jesus is. We don't know whether he comes to catch Jesus out or if this is a friendly visit. And in the darkness, his opening question carries that duality of belief. Is he saying that Jesus is from God, or is he still questioning that? In the second section, it feels as though Nicodemus has stepped back into the darkness and that Jesus' words are now for a bigger audience. In unpicking the exclusivity of who the light of God is for, we do have to step back into the period of time when the gospel was being written. If the New Testament books were placed in order of when they were actually written, then John's gospel would have been number 13 of 28. It's dated around 90 AD, and scholars think that there was an earlier edition which was edited and added to, And that may explain why there are two endings found at the end of the gospel. As a gospel of signs, it gives an impression of how Jesus was spoken about, and not really much about what he said, although what we heard today may challenge that thought. The book's written in a period when those who follow the way, the path of Christ, are subject to persecution. They don't fit with the world around them, and instead are a minority group seeking words of encouragement, words of strength, a way of defining who they are in the midst of a changing world. With our sanitized view of the cross, we miss the significance of what having the cross of Christ lifted in their presence would mean. It's a reminder of the depth of suffering that they face on a daily basis. A reminder of the depth of human cruelty, as failing to understand the presence of God in the midst of human life, Jesus had been crucified. And yet John tells them how important the lifting up of Jesus on the cross is to the understanding of the depth of divine love for humanity. It's not to ignore the threat and overriding fear of this small minority group, but instead to offer them the assurance that in the midst of all their experiences, Christ was with them. They're not alone. Christ walked their path. They're not to be paralyzed by fear, for Christ held their hands. Life was to be led in the knowledge that it was shared with God. God brought love into fear and encouraged them to step out boldly in faith under the assurance that the cross was not the end, but the opportunity for a new beginning. My spider plan last night for this next section said, you try and pull all this together to make sense of it in terms of Mothering Sunday and nurturing talent. I didn't mention that's what the sermon's supposed to be called, did I? Nurturing talent. Some will have recognised that the description of the staff of Moses is similar to the description of the rod of Asclepius, a symbol of medicine. And I suspect that's where, when I was thinking of sermon titles, that's where the nurturing came in. But before we get lost in another snake story, let's concentrate on what we've heard today. For in what we've heard, the human ability to become frustrated and inactive is highlighted. Hebrews frustrated by a never-ending journey, the early church paralyzed by the fear of the worst their faith might lead to. And perhaps it's that paralysis that we're called to transform. Lifting the cross in our presence, calling to mind the real fear that faith can bring, we're to nestle on our desire for an easy life and to choose the things that pass our way easily rather than step out boldly to do Christ's work. For us today, it's easy to come to church Sunday by Sunday and then walk away, paralyzed by complacency. But the challenge of every Sunday is to encounter the presence of Christ and the walk out into life with his cross held high over activities, so that others might be urged to new knowledge of his love in what they encounter through us. Maybe we are to be snake charmers, recognizing in others the gifts and skills that are needed if God's love is to be seen in the building up of communities. Or maybe we're the ones to be charmed and discover that the little bit of time and the remarkable skill that we've hidden for fear that others might scoff has been called into the light where God might shape it so that Christ's presence is embodied for others. Amen.